to In the News for March 29, 2024. I am Brett Burney from AppsInLaw.com.
And this is Jeff Richardson from iPhone JD. How you doing, Brett?
Good morning, Jeff. It's good to talk with you as always. And why don't we talk some soccer?
Yeah, you know,
or some football. Let's talk about a little bit of this. I thought you had some great points that you were making this week in your post, Jeff.
I had two very interesting sports-related things last night, Brett. First of all, I don't go to sports to live sports very often, but last night I had an opportunity where somebody had a suite at where the Pelicans play NBA basketball.
So I
got two tickets for the suite, which was so fun. So I brought my daughter because she's a she knows 100 times more about basketball than I do, and we went to the game to watch the Pelicans play the Milwaukee Bucks. The Pelicans won, woohoo! But it was a great experience because you know, I was reminded as I was there that when I'm watching a football game or a soccer game or a basketball game, if you're watching at home on TV with the announcers, I feel like I totally understand what's going on.
Right.
It's the best way to really follow the game. When I actually go to the Superdome to watch the Saints or the Smoothie King Arena last night to watch the Pelicans, you know, I can see, of course, I can see what's going on, but not quite as close. Although it was wonderful to be in a suite yesterday. Don't get me wrong with, you know, free drinks, food, and everything else like that.
Oh, yeah.
And big seats. That's a nice night to do it. But there's something about the experience of being there. You know, it's just the crowd noise and the lights and the sound. And so the overall experience, it's just very different. And anyone who's been to a live game knows what I'm talking about. It's a very different experience than just watching it at home. And I mean, you can debate which one is better or worse, but they are truly different experiences, even though you're watching the game. So I did that last night and I was sort of excited about it. And the Pelicans won, so we're all excited. And then last night I was putting together today's post. I saw that the what you just mentioned, the Jason Snell and other people have talked about how Apple released an immersive video late last night, which was a highlight reel from Major League Soccer, the American Soccer League, from the game at the very end of 2023. So it's a game that was 4 months ago. And they put it together into this highlight reel. So it's only 5 minutes, but Apple had its special 3D cameras. This is for the Apple Vision Pro, by the way, if that's not clear. Apple had its special 3D cameras. They had them like at the corner of the field. They had it just above the goal. They had it in the crowd. They had it as the team comes out. At the very end, they had it in the team locker room. And they put it together into this little video. Brett, it was the most incredible video I have ever seen in my entire life.
It
was stunning. I mean, first of all, the picture quality was amazing. These cameras that they're using must cost $1 billion each.
Right.
It was so perfect. But it was so, I mean, Apple calls this immersive video. It was so immersive, Brett. It was just, you felt like you were right there on the soccer field, because these immersive videos, they are 180 degrees, right? So as far as you look up and down and left and right, now if you turn completely around, it's just black, but everything around you, so your entire field of vision when you're wearing the Apple Vision Pro is filled up with whatever they're filming, and like you are literally in places that you would never be able to stand on the sideline like that unless you were a coach. You would certainly never be able to be perched on top of the goal. You are or behind the goal. I mean, nobody would ever have these incredible angles that they have shot. And it's so immersive. Even when you're in the crowd, there's parts of the video where you're in the crowd. And of course, that's just in the stands like everybody else could be. But it feels so immersive. It was so much that when it ended, I was upset because it was only 5 minutes. I wanted to stay there. And because it was a highlight reel, you know how highlight reels, they'll have like, you know, 5 seconds and then they go to another 5 seconds. You know, you cut back and
around.
Forth. Right. I sort of wish that they didn't do that because I just wanted to sit there and enjoy the surroundings. And so I took my Apple Vision Pro off, and my son, who happened to be awake at the time, runs over to me. He's like, I was saying, oh my goodness, so many times out loud that he, of course, had to watch it. So then I got to watch.
Of course.
And I shared it with him and he got a chance to watch it. And I was watching his reactions as he was moving around, looking silly with goggles on his face. And, you know, he was doing all the oohing and aahing. It was amazing. So my point is this. When you're wearing the Apple Vision Pro, which, of course, is definitely the future, you know, seeing the future today. And when you're watching an immersive video, it was as good as that Pelicans game was in the stadium last night. And don't get me wrong, that's a different experience.
Sure.
I think the 5 minutes that I spent watching this soccer game, and I'm not even a big soccer fan, was more impressive than the amazing suite at the Pelican games. And
Whoa.
how much would a ticket to a suite at a Pelicans game cost,
A
or any NBA
lot.
game? I'm sure,
Yeah.
like, I don't even know, over $1,000 a ticket or something like that. So if you're looking for a way to justify the cost of the $2,500 Vision Pro, this was incredible.
It's space for
So
itself. Yeah.
here's what I've been thinking about it ever since last night, Brett. And one of the
Yeah.
things that I was thinking about is Apple Immersive Video. What's out there? And the reality is, and this was also mentioned in that John Gruber article that I linked to,
Yeah,
is there's not
right.
that much. There's really not that much. You know, when the Apple Vision Pro first came out, which was 8 weeks ago, they had two series. They're called series, which makes you think there's going to be other episodes. The first one was called Adventure, and the very first episode there was a woman named Faith Dickey who was doing
Oh,
eye
yeah, I
lining.
remember this
And
press
we've talked
release.
about
Yeah.
this. And
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think when I described it to you before, I've said, like, you're so close to this incredible thing that she's doing, and she's right.
Yeah, here
It's
she is.
it was
Yeah.
almost like this intimate experience because you're right there with her, and it's breathtaking and it's amazing. And then the sec, but this is the first episode of Adventure. They haven't come out with a second episode yet. The
Oh.
second show is called Wildlife, and it is the
This
first
here go. There
episode,
it
you're at
is. Yeah.
a rhinoceros sanctuary. So you have like these baby rhinos coming up to you. It's the cutest and most amazing thing. And you can see the texture in their skin because they're so close to you. It's amazing. I can't wait to episode number two. We still don't have it yet. And then there were two other things that came out. There was Alicia Keys' rehearsal room,
There was
where
somewhere.
she is
Yeah, there.
just
Yeah, here
she's
she
in a
is.
recording studio, and like you're right there with her, which is really cool. There's a thing called Prehistoric Planet Immersive, which is computer generated. It's but it's as if dinosaurs are real, and you're like
Yeah,
watching them
yeah.
walk around and stuff. And those are the ones that are movies. There's also this thing called Encounter Dinosaurs, which is technically an
Yeah,
app,
here's.
but so it's a
Yeah.
little interactive. Like you hold your finger out and a butterfly comes and lands on your finger, but it's basically watching a movie, right? It's basically watching a dinosaur movie. And that was, I mean, those five things is what Apple came out with 8 weeks ago.
Oh,
The only other
that's
thing is
it.
they have a demo reel. Remind me, Brett, you have gone to Apple Store to do a demo of an Apple Vision Pro or not? You
No, I
haven't done it yet. Okay,
haven't
well,
yet. No,
when you do
this
it,
is hurting.
they're going to show you a demo reel, which is everything I've just described. They're going to show you little
Right.
snippets
I
of
remember
it.
the butterfly thing. Yeah.
And yeah, and they will show you snippets of some of the future episodes of this adventure show and the other wildlife show that are still not available for anyone else to see yet.
What?
But that's it. So this the immersive video is by far the most impressive thing you can do with an Apple Vision Pro. It blows everything else that you can do with this device away. And we need more of it.
Wow.
I mean, as John Gruber points out in his article, Apple should be
Right.
releasing stuff every single week, and they're not. And this now that we have one more item, this Major League Soccer Cup playoff highlights,
Right.
it's great, but it took them 4 months to put this thing together.
I
I mean,
know.
they got
Yeah.
to get their act together. And you know, it's not even just that. It's not even just the Apple Vision Pro has been out for, you know, 8 weeks. That's not a very long time. But Apple introduced the Apple Vision Pro back
Exactly.
on June 5th of last year. So they've had a lot, I mean, they've known this was coming. They've had lots of time. Apple certainly has lots of money. Apple certainly knows a thing or two
That's
about making movies, you know, with
right.
Apple TV Plus. I don't understand. And again, I realize that this is almost like a first world problem because so few people have Apple Vision Pros right now. I know that. And so for me to complain that there's not enough content, you know, too bad. You know, who am I to complain about diddly squat? I totally understand that. It's going to be a while before the Apple Vision Pro is, you know, something that more and more people have, and there's future versions of it. But at the same time, this is the time for Apple to start building up content so that by the time somebody does buy one a year from now, there's lots of content available. So, you know, I'm going to end my rant by saying that the brand new thing with the soccer cup, it's breathtaking. It's amazing. If anyone out there listening, if you have an Apple Vision Pro, like I said in my post today, watch it immediately. If you don't have one, please go find a friend that has it or go to an Apple store and
Go to
ask
an
if they will
Apple
let you
store.
watch it. It
Yeah.
is amazing. And if you and when you watch this and you start to think about a potential future of
What
watching
could be,
live or even
right?
semi-live sports, you know, maybe things, you know, a couple of days later in this, it's just breathtaking. It's amazing. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before. It's just too cool. But Apple needs to be coming out with more stuff. They
Right.
need to. I don't understand why
Well,
there's so few things available right now.
this jumped out at me in Jason's article here. This 5-minute highlight package is being released 110 days after last year's MLS Cup final.
My
That is
goodness.
not a great turnaround time. And that's it. So first of all, I'm thinking, Jeff, they surely would have recorded the entire match, right?
Right.
In immersive video or whatever that they're using to record this. So we have the footage somewhere. And that was my second thought you already touched on. It's not like that this is a result of funds, insufficient funds. Apple certainly has the resources and the funds to be able to get this out if it was a simple matter of just making it happen. And so then I'm thinking, is it the mechanics involved that is being the the governor on this? I mean, is it something that just can't happen because does it take that long? Do we not have powerful enough processors that
I
Apple
don't know.
obviously does have it? I mean, those are just the questions that come to mind on this. It's, once I read Jason and John Gruber's points here, John says perhaps the most single most surprising aspect of Apple's launch plan for Vision Pro is the relative dearth of original immersive content. You've been talking about this lady on the high wire for a while. We've seen, like you said, we've seen all the journalists that have gone in and done the little reels that they have. And maybe there's one thing for it being a highlight reel as opposed to being maybe a full featured, full length, either a soccer match or a movie or something else. But it just doesn't make sense. Like, there has to be something else under the hood that we just don't know about. Maybe I don't understand why this would necessarily be, delayed as much as it
Yeah,
is. And
I don't get it
obviously,
either.
this is being shared by a lot of people, but just doesn't make sense yet.
I know that editing takes time, but really this much time? And when I think about editing, what I would
Right,
really love, I mean,
right.
as you point out, Brett, they clearly recorded that whole soccer game, right? So, and I don't know
I
how
would
many
think,
camera
yes.
I don't know how many camera angles they had, unless it was just one camera that they were moving around. Presumably there were mul these whatever 3D cameras they were using,
I would
if they had,
surely, right.
let's just say, eight of them, I don't even know, six of them. What would be totally amazing is imagine watching a game, whether it's a soccer or football, whatever, where you as the, because it was recorded, you as the viewer could just sit there and click on some button to switch between whatever angle you wanted. Like right now, I want to be on this side. Right now, put me in the crowd, put
Right,
me over here. And
right.
if I could just, I don't need someone else to be the editor. I could be my own editor and decide what camera angle do I want to see. That would be the most impressive. That's there's nothing sophisticated or complicated about what I'm describing, at least in
Right.
theory. It would be
Yeah.
the most incredible way to watch a game ever. And because this immersive video is so mind-blowing, when I was coming in to record today's podcast, I was listening to a podcast called another podcast in my car called Dithering, which is John Gruber's on it, who wrote this article. And John Gruber
Right.
was describing back in the 80s and 90s, and maybe even still today, they used to have this TV show on HBO called Inside the NFL. And what they would
Yes,
do is
I was just thinking that.
instead of using the video from the NFL games, they would use film that was recorded with a film camera, which meant it had to be developed. But when you would, and many people listening to this have probably seen these before, when you watch a football game
Right.
that was recorded in film, the quality is so much higher than the video, right? It feels like it's a professional movie. And as a result, it adds
Yeah.
like gravitas. Plus, they would often slow things down and have the deep voice describing the game. And so it gave, a football experience that was completely unlike watching it on TV. And Apple Immersive Video, it's the same thing, but even more, because
Interesting.
as much more impressive as film is, as video, I'm sorry, is film versus video for watching a
Right.
football game, immersive video versus regular video is 10 times more impressive. So there are precedents for this. There's nothing I'm describing that anyone
Right.
with foresight cannot understand how
Right.
amazing it would be. There must be just some barrier, cost or otherwise, that stops Apple from doing more of this. And again, we're talking about sports, but frankly, go back to your shows, go back to your adventure show and give us more episodes. So,
Right.
hopefully this will all be remedied, and 6 months or a year from now, we'll be saying, haha, remember when there were only a few things available and now there's so
I
much.
know.
But
Yeah, I mean, we keep throwing around this phrase, banting it around all the time. It's like this is, this is looking towards the future. And it's just as you were mentioning that when it's immersive video versus quote regular video, obviously this is going to become the quote regular video, right? I mean, I just can imagine once the Apple Vision Pro, we've just seen version one now, not even barely a month for crying out loud. It's going to get smaller. It's going to get more streamlined. It's going to get better. And I guess this is what I get excited about because I don't have a Vision Pro yet, but just hearing you talk about it, of how exciting that it is, I almost kind of remember, you know, some of those transitions into 4K video and what it looked like. Oh, my goodness, it looks so real. Like you can see the wrinkles on their face. And now just to be able to imagine what this is going to. But
you know what I think about, Brett, is remember back in the 1990s when QuickTime first came out for computers? And in fact, maybe you weren't even a Mac user back then. You may have been a PC user back then. But when the first QuickTime movies came out, they were basically postage stamp size. It was so small. But the idea that you were watching a video on the computer was so cool. And then over time, bigger and better and everything else. And so I feel like we're at that same sort of beginning stages that, don't get me wrong, the quality right now is far better than postage stamp. But it's the same idea that there's not much content available. It's just becoming it's actually a pretty good lead into the next topic we're going to talk about now that I think about it, which is if you're ready to move on, the Apple TV Plus has just celebrated its fifth year. And what I think is so funny is when Apple TV Plus first came out, how many shows were there? 4, 5, 6? I mean, there was nothing, right? And now there's
it's like
so
one
many.
Show. It's just a few. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah.
It's so it was fun this week to sort of, you know, toast Apple TV Plus for having 5 years out there. They've got so many shows there. One of the things, the one that you're showing right now that said that, at least according to IMDb, I'm not sure how reliable of a source that is, but it's the highest rated content, which it makes some sense because unlike the other streaming programs that have a deep back catalog, Apple really doesn't. So all they really have, with a couple exceptions, like some things that are just temporarily around for a couple of months, it's really all their own content. And although they've had a few shows that have been stinkers, most of them have been quite good. And so, you know, just from a statistical standpoint, it does not surprise me that they have more high quality shows per capita, or whatever the right word to describe it is, than any other network, just because it's almost like, you know, all they have is the good stuff. They don't really have the bad stuff, or the medium stuff, which has been great.
This is Felipe Esposito writing a 9 to 5 Mac. And I thought this was just really interesting. I really don't pay attention a lot to the ratings and stuff, but I thought this was so interesting because it says Apple TV has some of the highest rated shows on IMDb. But what to me was even more interesting, Amazon Prime Video, it says, leads the segment of library on IMDb. 13,827 movies and shows that are rated in there. That's double than that of Netflix, which comes in second.
Interesting.
But Apple TV Plus has only 271 titles available. Think about that disparity in the numbers there. But yet the Apple TV Plus shows, which obviously you and I have talked about and enjoy tremendously, it's just to see that they are doing so much better from a rating perspective, from a personal rating perspective. That's pretty amazing. And I think that just continues support with what they're trying to do. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, maybe it's an advantage, because have you ever had this happen, Brett, where like you open up Netflix and there's so you don't even know what are we going to watch?
Yeah.
There's unlimited stuff. Whereas when you open up Apple TV Plus and they have that, top 10 or top 20 trendings, just look at that list, because chances are, unless you've seen them all, there's going to be something on that list that is absolutely worth watching. And and you don't have to spend an hour deciding which one of the 20,000 shows are we going to watch tonight. So, I don't know, maybe this is a little contrarian, but I guess you could argue it's an advantage that it's a limited number.
Interesting. Just going back thinking, a couple of things quickly, but the first topic we were talking about, this one too, just the changing landscape. I mean, to me, entertainment is always such an exciting place to kind of watch where some of these changes take place. I saw Casey Neistat, which obviously a lot of people know on YouTube. He is friends with the director of a movie that just came out, The Roadhouse, right? That's on Amazon Prime, by the way. And the whole video that Casey did, because he's Casey, was talking to this director who wanted this movie experience to be in theaters specifically. Like, it was just like a party, like the way you have to go and watch the video to kind of get it. But the director was fighting with Amazon Prime, because Amazon Prime did not want to release it to the actual theaters. And they only wanted it to allow it to go straight into the streaming service. And this director was upset. He was going to boycott, all this kind of stuff. Well, eventually he ended up going down to South by Southwest and watching it in the only theater showing that it was going to be in, because it was all the stars and everything was there.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting to watch that because it's a very well-respected director. He did Swingers, right, or whatever that Las Vegas movie was. I mean, just several great, great movies. And it was just interesting to watch him insist upon how he wanted people to experience his movie, this Roadhouse movie, which looks pretty impressive, in the theaters. Like, he wanted that experience, but yet it was going to the streaming. And I remember the director saying specifically, it's because it's a party. Like, you want to be with other people and watch this as an experience, as opposed to maybe, you know, being in your living room. But then now you talking about the Apple Vision Pro all these times and just having, you know, right now, at least this immersive video is an individualistic experience, right? You have to do it unless you have other people with Vision Pro, but then even then you're kind of in a virtual environment on some of that. And
that's
interesting.
The knock, Brett. It's true, because whenever I'm watching content, well, like last night, for example, I had to watch the soccer and then I gave it to my son.
Give it to your son, right?
And likewise, I've watched movies that have been totally, you know, incredible 3D movies that, you know, to watch on the Vision Pro. I'll mention a silly one. Just the other day, I happened to notice on Disney Plus that there's a Pixar movie that came out years ago called Luca. It's a cartoon. It's like, you know, little monsters that live off the coast of Italy, but it's in 3D. And so I haven't finished it yet, but I just started watching a little bit, and it was just so fun to watch. And like, there was so many little in jokes, but it takes place on the coast of Italy. And my wife and I traveled there a couple years ago, and like, so many things ring true that, you know, right. Like, you visit someplace and you see it in a movie.
Yeah, you're like,
and like, I wanted to be talking to my wife about it, even though she was downstairs, like, she can't see it because it's just on my head. And that is the downside of the Vision Pro, is it's a very solitary experience, unlike being at that basketball game last night where, you know, you have everybody around you, or traditional TV watching and stuff. So, it's different.
But then on the other hand, I'll just mention this real quick. I became a huge Dune movie fan when that came out, if you remember, right? And that's on HBO Max, which is Max now, just the streaming service. I did not go watch that in the theater, and I waited until it came out. And I remember that it came out in a very short time frame on Max, and I have loved it. I've rewatched several scenes and I loved it. This is a movie, though, Jeff, that my wife has no interest in at all whatsoever. And so from this aspect, though, this is a movie that I would love to experience on my own, in my own world, and I would love it in from an immersive video perspective. Now, in this instance, it's only gone to theaters, and Max hasn't even announced, or HBO hasn't announced, when it's going to be available on the Max streaming service. I haven't seen it yet. And it's like, I am itching to go. I was even looking up in Fandango for movie times, which I think I forgot my account, Jeff, because I haven't been to an actual live movie in years. But I was like so itching to want to see this. And I wanted to go and see it in the IMAX experience. There was only one in my area, and it was only there for like a week. And so now, you know, do I settle for a, quote, regular theater experience?
Right,
which,
right,
you know, that's gotten much better from our days, right? I mean, you've got, like, recliners and everything now, which is crazy. Or do I just wait till it comes on the streaming service, in which case then I'm either going to be probably on my laptop screen watching it by myself, because my wife, you know, isn't going to want to watch it with me necessarily. Or, you know, do I find time to stay up late and watch it at night, you know, on the big screen? You know, it's just like, I know some of these things aren't new, but just to underscore your point, some of the things we were talking about, it's just making me think, you know, do you want to choose your own entertainment service, or, you know, how is that going to look like? But anyway, it's just a lot of this coming to mind now that we're talking about Apple TV Plus. And again, that underscores even the fact that Apple has put so much effort and funds into the shows for Apple TV Plus. That is another point that I'm like, how is it taking so long from the immersive video? Unless it's just more of a control thing, right? They just want to make sure it's perfect and looks beautiful and everything. Who knows? Only Apple knows right now. But it's just, it's a little bit fun to watch all this kind of stuff. I'm glad
one of these days, Brett, we're going to have a TV show on Apple TV Plus that's going to be weekly, and every episode is going to be an immersive video and for Vision Pro, and it's going to be amazing. Now, that day I'm describing,
it's
maybe 20 years from now.
Right.
I have no idea.
Right.
But it will come at some point.
All right. Let's move on to another big announcement that Apple had, something that we have been anticipating. And usually around this time of year, Apple announces the dates for WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference. We're excited about this for several reasons. First of all, it's like a week-long conference for mostly developers. They come to Apple's campus a lot of times, although now they do it virtually a lot. And there's some really good nuggets of information that come out all week long about different things that they're doing and little hints and stuff. But the first day of Dub is typically when Tim Cook and other executives take the stage, well, take the video virtual stage, and they introduce or announce several changes. Both typically we get a highlight of what we think is coming for the next iteration of the operating system, iOS. Every once in a while, most of the time, they'll throw in something along with some hardware aspects here. Now, I haven't been able to delve into this too much yet, Jeff, but what are we expecting now for WWDC, which is going to be in June? June 10th is the keynote conference. June 10th. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we're going to hear something on June 10th. And as you said, no question, we're going to hear about iOS 18, the next version of the operating system. Hardware is always a possibility. You know, you and I have talked in the past.
Not a guarantee.
We know that Apple has some iPads that they're waiting to come out with.
Yeah. But
the latest rumors I've heard is that now they're not going to come out until May. Who knows? So as we get closer to Dub, maybe the iPads will be announced on June 10th as well. We'll see. But I don't know. I mean, there have been big hardware announcements at WWDC in the past. I don't know if we'll see them this year. Maybe yes or no. But what I'm really interested in is, and I guess this is more of a software thing than a hardware thing, but it's the artificial intelligence. I mean, the thing that Tim Cook told us was coming, you know, I linked this morning that, who was it? It was Greg Joswiak said, he didn't say artificial intelligence. Twitter. He said, absolutely incredible AI.
Ooh, you know, it just so happens
letters A and I,
that those are the same letters.
Exactly. So we're going to definitely see something AI related. It's going to probably be part of iOS 18. And I think that's going to be exciting. So I'm looking forward to it. And like you say, June 10, not that far away.
I am positive that we'll be hearing some more people talk about this and kind of give some illusion of what we might be expecting and seeing. But yeah, I mean, we can always postulate what's going to happen, but usually Apple is pretty good about surprising us and other folks as well. Or, and sometimes, to be fair, disappointing us, right? We expected this and this to happen, and they didn't even talk about that. But anyway, it's a good time we'll be had by all. I'm positive it's going to be pretty exciting to kind of see. Because we have seen some wrinkles where Apple has been talking about AI, right? They released an amazing paper not too long ago. They just talked about using some Google AI, I think, on their platforms or making some partnerships. So, you know, we'll have more of this leading up in the next in the next month or two. Another thing that you linked to today, which I think is great, is Qi 2 charging. We've talked about this a little bit. Typically, this requires a Qi 2 compatible charger, but the iPhone wasn't able to take advantage of it until 17.4. iOS 17.4 was released. And now, apparently, you can get a full 15-watt speed wireless charge, which is great.
Yeah, even all the way back to the iPhone 12, which is incredible. You know, for folks, just as a reminder, Apple has its technology called MagSafe. And if you get something that is MagSafe certified, and if you're using hardware that works with it, then as you said, Brett, you can get 15-watt charger, which is 15-watt charging is still much slower than plugging in a cord. But still, it's starting to get relatively fast. And so I have in front of me, we've talked about it before, one of these little, you know, products that as I'm sitting here, I've got my iPhone sort of MagSafe plugged in and I can see the time and stuff. And it's charging as it sits there. And I love it. So the original version of Qi has been around for a long time. And when we say Qi, it's Qi. So now Qi 2 gets double the speed, which means it's just as fast. For all intents and purposes, Qi 2 is basically MagSafe. It's MagSafe for things that are not MagSafe certified. It's MagSafe for Android, for everybody else. And that's no mistake. Apple actually donated to the Qi standard the MagSafe technology. So it's not like it's a coincidence that it's basically the same thing. And what what it means is that a third party can make a product. They don't have to pay Apple to get the MagSafe certified label. They can just say we're Qi 2 compatible. And as long as it's a decent enough product, of course, you know, there's something to be said for something being MagSafe certified because there's a little bit of trustworthiness there. But if it's from a reputable company that you know, then you know, you can get a Qi 2 charger and it'll probably be cheaper than something that would be, you know, MagSafe certified, and it will be just as good. So it's nice to have Qi 2 out there, and it's a nice surprise that the latest update to iOS 17.4, it now goes back to, you know, you can use it with the iPhone 15, 14, it had been the 13, and now, just as a surprise, they threw in support for the iPhone 12. As I'm sitting here, Brett, I'm trying to remember which version of iPhone first added wireless charging, it may have been the iPhone
Was
12
it
because
12 or 13? I'm trying to remember
it
now.
wasn't, well, I mean, if this adds it to
Oh,
iPhone
that's
12, so it must have had
okay.
it. Because the original iPhone 10, when it came out
Sure,
with the big
sure.
screen, I don't think it had wireless charging. I'd have to go back and look at my notes,
I
but
know, I
it's
know.
always nice when Apple takes a product that's been out there for a long time and gives it a new feature. I mean, that's great. You know, so you don't have to buy the latest and greatest
Sure.
to get access to a new feature. So.
So MagSafe is only available from Apple. Is that correct? Like if you get a
Because it's
MagSafe,
right. Well,
okay.
it's that's their brand name for it. And of course, it's confusing because
Sure.
there's two
Okay.
types of
Okay.
MagSafe. There's MagSafe for
Right.
computers, and the
Right.
MagSafe for computers is a cord that at the end
Yeah,
of it
I
plugs
got
into
it
the
here.
computer,
I just
but it's
ripped
got
mine out.
magnets so it can pull off. And the
Right.
nice thing
I
about the
love that.
MagSafe cord is that if somebody knocks the cord out of your laptop computer,
Yeah.
it's not going to drag your laptop along with it. It's just magnets, so it'll just disconnect.
Right.
And then they
Love
have
it.
MagSafe for the iPhone, which, as you've
Yeah.
just found, was introduced with the iPhone 12, as I expected. And so that is, it's nothing at all like MagSafe for the computer. It's just the idea that
Okay.
you can connect something with a magnet to the back of your iPhone and it will charge while it's connected. Or, of course, you can use MagSafe for other things too, like I have an Apple case that has MagSafe just to sort of, you know, keep it on there, or people can use MagSafe to pass
Right.
data. You can do lots of different things with MagSafe, but charging is the main one.
Well, I was asking because I was thinking to myself, well, I'm only going to go with MagSafe. Like, I feel, you know, this Qi2 is a general thing. But then I'm thinking, wait a minute. If I get it from Apple, it's branded as MagSafe. But I have probably three or four other wireless charging things, you know, that you and I have talked about that are not from Apple. They're from typically, like, kind of, well, not knockoff brands, but, you know, non-Apple brands. But that's not MagSafe, or that's not branded as MagSafe, but it
Well,
is
it
using
can be.
Qi, right? It's just pretty much the same
Yeah.
underlying technology.
You can buy third-party products that say on the label MagSafe compatible, and they have paid
Compatible,
money to
right?
Apple,
Okay.
and Apple has
Oh, here
certified
it
it for
is down here.
MagSafe.
Okay.
And so, and there's a certain, I find that if you get something that says it's MagSafe compatible, you can trust the
Yeah.
quality of it because it means that Apple has
I
given it a
agree.
look
I
over.
agree. Yep. Yep.
But you're right, Brett. There are also companies out there that don't want to pay the money to Apple for the certification process.
Right,
And
right.
as long as it's still a reputable company, give it a shot. Now, on the other hand, maybe you're saving yourself $20 and you get a product that's complete, it's going to fall apart in a week. I have no idea. So, I mean, you always have risks whenever you find some no-name company on Amazon or something like that. But
Okay. Well, this is helpful. While you've been talking, I've brought up this page on 9to5Mac. It's their MagSafe page, and it's exactly what you just described. They have the Mac version, the iPhone version, and they even talk about the MagSafe compatible. Okay. Thanks for helping me clarify all of that. That's good. And then similarly, that is a story that came out from the fact that we upgraded to 17.4, even though I think last week, Jeff, we talked about 17.4.1, and there
Right.
was a couple of security fixes that there was no description or underlying information, except what this is Michael Potuck now at 9to5Mac was able to at least uncover some of the details of the two security fixes from 17.4.1. Not that big of a deal, I think. As I find many times, these are very, you know, fringe kind of solutions or occurrences. But it's good to know that they have been fixed, I guess.
What was good for me, Brett, was to see when they described what they fixed, it said, we've patched something that could have caused something, that
Yeah,
could have.
right.
And that word
That's
could
true.
is key because sometimes Apple releases an update and they say,
Yeah.
oh, this is actually out in the wild, like right now. And that's the
Right,
ones
right.
that you're like, let's hurry up. And,
Nope.
the ones this time, the ones that they fixed are more theoretical. Bravo to Apple. Of course, you want to fix the
Yeah.
flaw before somebody exploits them. But I think, and this is just, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think that last week when you and I were saying that Apple had not revealed what they patched yet, I have a theory on that. I had seen some website that suggested that Apple
Oh,
had
okay.
they had updated some devices, but not all of them. Like, for example, they updated the iPhone before the Mac. And I think that Apple wanted to get patches for all of its hardware out there before they revealed to the world what they were patching, because
Yeah.
otherwise, if you told everybody what the patch was for the iPhone and they had not yet patched the Mac, some clever, bad guy could say, oh, let me exploit that for the Mac real quick, and there's no patch
Sure.
available yet. And so I think that that's what happened here, is once Apple had its patch
Gotcha.
available for all
Okay.
of its platforms, then they disclosed to the world what they fixed.
Let's go to our Where You At segment, Jeff.
Where you at?
Two stories that you reported on today. One has an unfortunate ending. The other has a happy ending. This just made my skin crawl reading this. I think because, like, I don't even know what you would do in this situation. But maybe you can give the story a little bit better. Apparently, there was a carjacking involved. The police were able to track the car based on somebody's AirPods being left in the car. And it was at an address of a home of this poor family where the SWAT team came in because the carjackers apparently were armed. So they were not taking, you know, any caution here. Like, they went in full force, ransacked the house, apparently, all because the carjackers apparently had tossed the AirPods into the yard of this house. Yeah. This is just insane, Jeff. I don't even know what to think about this, really. But I can see where and why it would happen. I just is like, this seems like it should be in a different world, I guess.
Yeah. You know, on the one hand, the police must have been excited because they did not know how to track down the carjackers. And then they get this one great lead of somebody saying, they've got my AirPods and I'm using Find My and I can show you exactly where it is. You know, it just seems like such a great lead. And yet, as you said, you know, sometimes unintended consequences just because and I guess the AirPods were actually there. It said they were later found outside. So
they were
AirPods,
in the yard, right?
Yeah, so the AirPods were actually at
the
house.
The grass.
But that does not mean the bad guys were there. And so, unfortunately, the SWAT team, and, you know, I don't know what to say. I feel bad for the family, obviously.
Sure.
That must have been incredibly scary and everything else. On the other hand, you can sort of understand, I don't know, maybe the SWAT team should have had, you know, what do they call it? Like hearsay plus corroborating evidence.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, plus corroborating evidence. Right. Maybe you would have hoped that they had.
That's a new standard for evidence.
That's a new standard, yeah. Yes. Find my plus corroborating
evidence. For arrest warrants and search warrants.
So,
but you know, I mean, again, I think just because of the profession you and I are in, I'm glad Amber Neely at Apple Insider is reporting on this, but there's always at least two sides to every story, maybe multiple sides to the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't know exactly, you know, from standpoint. I mean, the police department hasn't reported on this, but I mean, like, wow, like just incredible. I just don't even know what to do on that. But I'm sorry for that family, like you said. Okay. How about the happy ending story? It seems like we almost heard this one before, but it never gets old. iPhone's emergency satellite features led authorities to a group of stranded hikers for a 24-hour rescue operation. I mean, this involved a helicopter that couldn't land because of weather. And then there was like, what was this car that they used, or some kind of a vehicle that they used on here? I can't even remember where it was. The helicopter couldn't land. And then, a snow cat. That's what I was looking at.
That's what it was.
So finally, a snow cat apparently had to weave itself up this mountain. It was like 3,500 feet in altitude. But they were able to rescue them thanks to the emergency SOS via satellite on the iPhone, and one of the folks' iPhone that they had.
Yeah. As you say, Brett, not the first time that somebody has been hiking. They've been off the grid, no cellular service, but something horrible has happened and they were able to use the satellite service to get help. So that is fantastic that worked. But, you know, there's just, you know, going to be lots of stories like this one of people taking advantage of the service. The reason that this story actually jumped out at me, Brett, and it had nothing to do with the story, but the place where they were hiking is called Mount Hood. I had never heard of Mount Hood before. I don't know if you had, but the reason that I know of Mount Hood is that when you have an Apple Vision Pro, you know how you can create an environment like just to pretend like you're somewhere else while you're using it? Like one of them is, you know, one of their environments is Mount Hood, where you're on top of mountains and you're looking up. So when I read about these hikers being on, you know, hiking Mount Hood, I'm like, oh yeah, Mount Hood. I've been there before. Yeah. Whenever I put my Apple Vision Pro on,
it could have been staged by Apple.
I just turn a dial and now I'm in Mount Hood. So yeah, I know Mount Hood.
I'm just going to guess that these hikers, they probably won't use that scene in their Apple Vision Pro.
Like,
you know, they're going to want to pass on some of that. The thing is, Jeff, I can't get tired of going over these stories, reporting on these stories, because it's like until every single person with an iPhone that has this capability knows and has the satellite feature, because I can just imagine. I mean, you're dehydrated, you're tired, you're exhausted, and it's like somebody has an iPhone and they have to remember that they actually have this capability on the phone. And then they know how to use it, right? They remember how to use it in the state of despair that they're in at the time, and that they have enough battery power to even use this, you know? I mean, it's just all those kind of things. And it's like, I'm never going to get tired of reporting on these stories because it's such an important component there. Last thing, the video of the week. Thank you, Jeff. For this is like the stream of Apple commercials, but they're just so good. They're just so good at what they do. This one is called Nice Try. And I got to tell you, I had no idea what was going on with this commercial until the very end. And I'm like, I see what you did there, you sneaky Apple. This is a good one here. I like this.
So, I mean, in case you haven't seen it yet, I guess we shouldn't spoil it. So let's just say it shows off some of the security features of the iPhone that everyone could take advantage of, no matter who you are. And it's a cute little video. It's worth
Did you see this little tip here? Look at this. So this is the thumbnail for the YouTube video.
Uh-huh.
Look at the little dot under the exclamation point. Isn't that good? That.
Very clever,
I think the kids call that an Easter egg. That's interesting there.
Good, all right, good catch.
The know, I got a simple one this time, but this came up for me because I keep thinking about those stories that you and I have talked about from Joanna Stern and her colleagues at the Wall Street Journal that have talked about the security flaws, or I mean, I don't know if a flaw. To me, it's not so much of a flaw. It has a mix of social engineering at the same time that Apple could have done more, but they didn't have to do more. All that kind of stuff, right? Wrapped up to it. We've done this a lot. Well, one of the settings that I just wanted to make sure that everybody was still familiar with or comfortable with is the auto lock setting on your iPhone. So you can go and see this right now. Go into settings, scroll down until you see display and brightness. And then one of the settings under there is auto lock. And if you jump in there, you can see that attention is detected when you are looking at the screen. So now with Face ID, the phone will actually detect if you're actually looking at it or if there's being attention being paid to it. When the attention is detected, iPhone does not dim the display. The only reason that this keeps coming up for me, Jeff, is because just the fear of like, we're constantly picking up our phone, using the phone, and then we set it down, right? Because I like, if I'm at dinner, I pick up the phone to check something, and then I set it down. But I don't always just lock the phone when I set it down. I just set it down, the screen is still on. Usually, you know, 9.9 times out of 10, that's not going to be an issue. But if I'm in a crowded spot, you know, a bar, some of those scenarios where Joanna and her colleagues were discussing, you know, with some of these issues, it's like, I want the phone to automatically lock if it's just sitting there after a set amount of time. Now, I've gone back and forth on this over the years. I used to have it to like 2 or 3 minutes because I'm like, well, wait a minute. What if I want to pick it up again? I don't want to have to, like, in the past, retype in my passcode because that usually takes about a second or two. Now that I have Face ID and it's so good on Face ID, Jeff, it's so quick. So now I have gone back to where I get it down to the least amount of time, which the least amount of time that Apple will allow this for you is 30 seconds. So the idea is I pick it up, Face ID almost recognizes me immediately because one of the other settings is raise to wake on there, right? So as soon as I pick it up, the phone tries to detect my face, and it does, and it unlocks even before, you know, in the time that I pick it up from the table and bring it up to my face, it's already unlocked typically, which is great. I think that that's fantastic, the fact that it does that. So it's already unlocked. And so now when I set it down, I don't care that it's 30 seconds. To me, that just has an up level of security because I know that as soon as I set it down within 30 seconds, the phone's going to lock. I don't have to worry about it anymore. But I also know that as soon as I pick it up again and it looks at my face, it's going to unlock. Now, the last thing quickly I'll say is that in a few seconds, if the phone doesn't detect that you're looking at it, it will automatically go dim. Like it goes almost like half brightness, right? And it does that maybe 10 seconds or so before it actually locks the screen completely on there. So I just wanted to remind everybody about the auto lock feature on the iPhone. My recommendation, frankly, I can't even find a reason why you would keep it unlocked more than maybe a minute, especially if it's a newer iPhone with Face ID. It's so quick on unlocking it that you might as well just put that down to the least amount of time to have it to say unlocked, and then and then just go with that. To me, that's just another layer of security on there. Plus, it helps your battery. if you know, the longer it stays on the screen, that's a battery suck on there as well. So that's my tip for the day, Jeff, is the auto lock feature. most of the time we don't even think about it. So go in and just check it. And if you can, bump it down as low as you can.
So thank you for the tip. I've just checked mine, Brett, and mine is set at 3 minutes. I don't remember purposefully setting it at 3 minutes, but after hearing your tip, I might move it down just to sort of, at least for like a week, and just sort of try it out and
see what it does.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of one thing that, and I mentioned this in the past, and again, I know very few people have Apple Vision Pros, but when I use my Apple Vision Pro to get work done, I will sometimes pick up my iPhone 2 and I'll be sitting there looking at it and it doesn't unlock. And of course, the reason it doesn't unlock is because I've got these big goggles blocking half my face. Even though I can see the Apple, I can see my iPhone, sure. It can't see me. And so that's sort of a pain to have to put the passcode in.
So that's
one thing. I will also mention just another tweak on this tip is that there are some rare circumstances where you might want just the opposite. And you mentioned that auto lock can be as little as 30 seconds. It can be as high as 5 minutes, or you could put it on never. And one of the reasons that I sometimes do never, and I know that I'm sure that you do too, I will sometimes give presentations from my iPad something like that. And so I'll have my iPad plugged into a projector, and I just want my iPad to stay on the entire time. No one's going to steal it. I'm right there in front of an audience, you know, and it's right there. And so I might be interacting with the audience, answering questions for a few minutes. I don't want to go back to my iPad and have it have gone to sleep for any reason. And so I try to remember before I start my presentation. Now, obviously, if you're in Keynote, it's not going to go to sleep. But if I'm just mirroring my iPad, I don't want it to go to sleep. So I will go and I'll put it on never, and I'll keep it on that never mode throughout the course of my 1 hour, whatever it is, an hour and a half presentation. And then when I'm done, I'll put it back to what it was. So it's useful to remember this feature for the reasons you described of having it short, but also keep in mind for having it long.
Gotcha.
So my tip of the week is something that we have mentioned before, but I don't think we've ever mentioned it as a specific tip of the week. And I just wanted to give it some specific love, which is the live voicemail feature, which was introduced with iOS 17. And I know maybe it is just me, Brett, but I have noticed over the last year or two, I'm getting more spam calls on my iPhone than ever before. And I even, through AT&T, there is a feature you can turn on. I forget what it's called, but they have an AT&T app that will try to detect spam. I think it's called My AT&T. And every once in a while during the day, I will glance down and it says, oh, spam call was detected, so we didn't even make your phone ring. And I'm like, thank you, AT&T. That was very nice of you. I'm glad that I wasn't interrupted. But other times people get through and it'll be a total fake call, or maybe not a fake call. Maybe there's somebody for a political donation or something that I just don't want to be dealing with as I'm trying to get work done. And I've noticed that, you know, back in the day when answering machines were still a thing in the 80s and the 90s, people used to do something, or even later, people used to do something called screening calls, where you would keep your answering machine on at home and people would leave a message. And if it's somebody you wanted to talk to, you would pick up the phone and talk to them. But otherwise, you would screen the call through the answering machine. Live voicemail does the same thing. So what you do is when a call comes in, if it's a number that you don't recognize, you can just tap right on the screen there to go to voicemail, and the caller will go to voicemail, but then you can tap a button where you can actually see the it transcribes in live time what they're saying. And so, you know, I'll be sitting here at my desk at work. Somebody will call me. I don't know who it is. I'll just send them to voicemail and do the live transcription. And as I'm sitting here typing, I'm glancing at my iPhone screen. And if it's actually somebody I want to talk to, which for me, Brett, if they're not in my contacts, I mean, maybe one out of every 25 times. I mean, it does happen, but it's very rare. You know, if it's someone I want to talk to, you just pick up the phone and you press the answer button and you start talking to them, and you'll surprise them because they're
Well, voicemail,
People are not used to the feature, unlike the old, you know, screening and answering machine thing. But you can then talk to them right then and there. But most of the time, it's nonsense. And in fact, most of the time, once the caller is sent to voicemail, because they know that they're just a solicitation phone call or whatever, they just hang up. And so I have this has been a real lifesaver is an exaggeration, but it has definitely reduced the annoyance of unwanted callers substantially for me ever since iOS 17 came out last fall with the live voicemail feature. So I have loved it over the last couple of months. If you're not taking full advantage of it, you know, you should really check it out because it really is nice.
So this nicely dovetails into my tip, Jeff, because I got to tell you, I love this feature, but I feel like I haven't been able to experience it fully because I can see the call come in. I don't pick up the call and I let it go to voicemail, right? Is the way we used to call it. And then I can see that the screen is still on for me and it is, it's like it's waiting. Like I can tell that it's transcribing the voicemail being left. But then because I have my auto lock set, the screen goes off before I could actually see the entire thing. Does that make sense? I don't know if that's an auto lock feature, but it's like I don't want to tap the screen because I don't want to pick up the call. Although I think there's an actual button there, right? So I don't know. I guess I'm more asking, is that an auto lock feature that it just, I don't get to be able to experience? I want to see the entire message, but because I have my auto lock feature set to 30 seconds, you had 3 minutes, then I see somebody starting the message and then the screen goes off.
That probably is what, so that would be a reason to have a little bit longer of an auto lock.
That could be one of the reasons, right? Yeah,
you do have to tap a button. I mean, you're not going to see the transcript automatically. You have to tap that button to say, show me the transcript as they're leaving it. And
But
if you've tapped that, and I guess for my current setting of 3 minutes, yeah, I mean, much like the picture that you're showing on the screen, I will see the words come up on the screen as they are talking. And again, you know, you can usually tell within the first sentence of the transcription whether it's somebody you want to talk to or not. So you normally normally do not have to wait very long at all to do that.
Now, I will say that if I do pick up the phone, I'm not answering the call, right? But if I pick up the phone and the phone can detect that I'm looking at it, I do see. That's the couple of times that I have seen the actual transcription, like the full override. So anyway, it's just, I guess it's finding that small balance. I mean, I'm going to lean toward the security side of having my auto lock go off quicker. But in some cases, if it locks and I then unlock it, well, then this screen, the live voicemail screen, is gone. It's like I go into my regular, you know, phone screen at that point.
Yeah.
And then I have to go into the voicemail app and everything on there. But anyway, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because now maybe I'll experiment both ways. By the way, that app, AT&T has a separate app for doing what you're talking about. It's called Active Armor is what it's called. Active Armor. Active Armor mobile security, and you have to go through and you have to tell it whether or not you want to stop certain calls, you know, block all spam callers, block telemarketer callers. There's a whole little wizard that you can go through on this. It used to be much simpler, but they've upgraded this now. That my AT&T is like your, you know, how to get into your AT&T account. But at least I still have the Active Armor app is what it's called there from AT&T. Allows you to control what calls get through and alerts you of possible spam calls on there, which is good. I need to reset that up. In fact, I just opened it up and I was like, I got to go through the whole guide and wizard on this as well. But you're right. I've been getting a lot of calls too, and I might have to go through that.
Thank you for getting the correct name of the app. But I mean, literally, as I'm looking at it right now, so you can see a call log of when it's blocked things. And so I can see that it blocked one call for me on Wednesday of this week. It blocked four calls on Tuesday. And in fact, for those calls, one of them, one of them came through, and that one came through. There's two that it labeled as a spam risk. And there's one that it labeled as a telemarketer, which is, you know, just as annoying as a spam risk. So it's interesting that you can actually look at your logs and see what it's been doing so that it's completely, you know, transparent and stuff. But it's not perfect, but every call that it catches, that's one less call that I have to deal with. You don't have to pay anything extra for it. As an AT&T customer, it's for free. I suspect that Verizon and T-Mobile and the other carriers probably have something similar. And I know that there are third-party apps in the App Store that do something similar as well. But it's nice. So
well, it's the cat and mouse game. It's the constant cat and mouse game, right? Yeah, as soon as somebody AT&T finds a way to block it, then of course the people that are trying to do this are going to find a way to get around it. But yeah, I have been using the earlier versions of this AT&T app, and I'm sure other providers have something similar on there as well. And it's a good thing to at least have, you know, if nothing else, it at least stops some, and I'll take that.
Yeah,
very good. Thanks, Jeff. As always, we'll talk with you next week, sir.
Thanks, Brett. Bye, bye, everybody.